Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show, the 11 o'clock hour on this Monday. G. Scott filling in for John. John will be back tomorrow, at least he promises. He's been abroad. I'm sure he'll have a return with all sorts of stories.
I did hear he was on the plane about 2 hours ago, so he should really. We were a little bit worried whether or not he'd actually land in time.
Yeah, I had a not to complain, but I was sitting in a Phoenix for my connecting flight and had a 4-hour delay, so I didn't get in until late. And I was concerned when you come from as far away as John was that he might come up with all sorts of excuses. But good, we can be guaranteed that he'll be here tomorrow. Anyway, G, it's been a blast working with G. We want to remind you to text the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. So, G, one of our favorite guys over at the Seattle Times is Gene Balk, the FYI guy. He always does these fascinating statistical analysis, sort of demographic analyses of the state of Washington or the city of Seattle. And he's got a really interesting generations kind of a story, a generational divide he's talking about Seattle. And it makes a lot of sense. When I first heard it, I go, what's the story? The story is basically that old people like me, like over 55, and young people under 40, are booming in this town. And all those poor people, those middle-aged people between the age of 40 and 54, it's not that they're like going away. It's not like they're dwindling. But when you have a 43% increase in millennials and a 31% increase in baby boomers, it's that middle generation that's getting lost in the dust. They're only increased by 2%. Now, Seattle's population has been booming of late. This is talking about the last decade. And that boom happens on the edges and not in the middle. And he says this might tell us a lot about the kind of battles that Seattle is going witnessing right now. Baby boomers, and I'm not a typical baby boomer, as John often says, but baby boomers tend to have property value issues more than the millennials, because millennials are mostly renters, and it makes sense. You're a baby boomer. If you're 55 or older, you're more likely to own your home. So you live in the neighborhoods. The millennials live in kind of the hot spots around Seattle, like Capitol Hill, Fremont, Ballard, actually, which is funny because when I was growing up, Ballard was as old as all can get in terms of its populace. And he says now you have these competitions, and then you get the poor old 40-somethings who are kind of lost in the shuffle.
No, it's not the poor olds. Like, that's the Gen X group. That's my group, Tom.
There you go.
We're fine.
Speak to me. You're fine. Okay.
We're fine. Well, here's what's happening is it makes sense, right? I'll be able to explain why the growth from 2007 to 2017, the reason why 69,000 millennials have showed up to this place. Well, that's because of tech. We agree, right?
Right.
You know
absolutely.
What I mean? You got Amazon thriving. You got Google. You got all this stuff that's thriving. So the tech has brought a lot of millennials here.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, it's for those that the baby boomers, right? Like you. And some others. The baby boomers have looked at Seattle winning all its awards, best place for this, best city for that, all the type of things. And we can all admit, those that are here in the Pacific Northwest, we know that this is a beautiful place to live.
Yeah.
And so those that want to retire are like, hey, let's go ahead that way. So then you understand the increase in the boomers. The reason why we only see 2% growth from 2007 to 2017 when it comes to Gen X, my folks, that's because those around the country are already dug in to what they're doing, right? So at my age, you have kids,
yes.
right?
Okay.
You have your career.
Yeah.
Unless you're that 40-something-year-old rapper that's deciding that you still want to rap. But outside of that, we're dug in. So you can't just really move. So a lot of times, you are probably thinking of making a move. Like, these are things that I think about as well.
Mm-hmm.
I can't make a move yet until my kids are done and out of the house. So that's the reason why you see the Gen Xers, 40 to 54, not making that move.
Yeah. So do you think that this is any is there any concern? The argument has been, and this is actually a little off the demographic topic that the FYI guy had looked at, The danger that a lot of us in Seattle grew up when it was much cheaper is that Seattle is like pricing itself out of the market for a lot of people.
Right.
And the reason there's so many millennials is not because we're such a bargain for millennials. It's just that there's so many millennials in the hot tech industry that can afford the Seattle prices. Do you think that the 40-somethings, your generation, Generation X, are getting aced out because they aren't making the big money that maybe the millennials are because they're at the, I don't know if you'd call them they're sort of before the tech industry blossomed in Seattle. They, you know, they have more traditional jobs, and so they're not cashing in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, you're 100% right. Not to nerd out a little bit, but I'll bring up Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
I'll bring up Paul Allen and Bill Gates, right? It was timing, right? Meaning the timing that they did things, they were born in the mid-50s, and by the time that they were 20 years old, that was during the time that was in the mid-70s. Well, they had this new way of thinking, like, hey, we're going to have this idea that everybody's going to get their personal computers. Yeah. Meanwhile, those at IBM, right, they're like, what are you talking about? We're already making our money. And Bill Gates and those guys are like, nah, this is going to be the new thing.
Yeah. Software, just, not hardware.
Right.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's about timing, right? And in the case of, not to say that those that work for IBM and all these big computers that were in main storages, not to say that they weren't doing well, but the timing came, and those who jumped on board in the tech and with Bill Gates and those guys in the 70s, they did okay.
Yeah, they did.
Well, the same thing goes with going on here in Seattle. Those that are Gen X and that age range, hey, you there's probably a good chance that you might not be into the tech. I'm not saying that you're not, but there's a lot of millennials that have come and done that. You know, I was talking to, you know, Sully?
Sully? Never heard of him.
You never heard of Sully?
Of course I know Sully, man. He's an old Oregon guy.
Sully said something to me this morning that I've been thinking about all day. I was like, hey, Sully, how was your weekend? Oh, it was great. Just got back from our beach house and things.
On the Oregon coast.
Oregon coast. I said, oh, man. I said, you got a beach house? He's like, oh, yeah. That was, it's been in our family since 1885. And I said, huh, must be nice to have something in your family since 1885. He says, oh, and he kind of looked at me. I said, yeah, I can't relate to that. No big deal. Right? So the boomers, right, a lot of them, they got some things that was maybe handed to them.
Sure.
So you kind of understand that in the Seattle area.
Yeah.
So you boomers are doing all right.
I think it's fine. In fact, you raise an interesting issue. The difference, and I don't know if you want to get into it too much, but in our pre-show meeting, you talked about the difference between a 40-year-old, let's say a 43-year-old and a 33-year-old. There's really 10 years. That's nothing.
It's a huge difference.
And the difference is what?
The 43-year-old will relate better with the boomer, right? 43 is going to relate better with 63 than 33. Absolutely.
And it's because of tech.
It's because of tech.
Yeah.
It's because of the things like, you know what I mean? Like some of those guys that 10 years ago, they don't understand what it was like to have three channels growing up.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean the television went off at night? Yeah, man, the television went off. Jacob, have you ever had a time in your life where the television was just off? Like you could not watch any more TV?
No.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That kind of deal. So that's why there's a huge difference between someone that's in their mid-40s and someone that's in maybe their early 30s.
Yeah.
Huge disconnect.
That's where the gulf is happening.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to move. We're actually going to keep a kind of a generational discussion going, but it's on a very different topic. And this is about, so Tommy Smith and John Carlos, is that before your time? Because that was definitely my time. I think it was before your time.
Before my time.
Yeah.
Are you trying to throw an age shot at me?
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to establish generations.
Okay.
So if you were of a certain political ilk, like I was in the 60s and 70s on the left, Tommy Smith and John Carlos were big heroes. They were the two Olympic medal winners who raised their black, you know, gloved fist at the medal ceremony in Mexico City in the Olympic Games. Now, they were, I mean, the country, just like they turned on Muhammad Ali at the time, Cassius Clay became Muhammad Ali when he refused to serve in the Vietnam War. They were castigated at the time by the majority of Americans. Mm-hmm. But now, in retrospect, they're kind of heralded as pioneers for at least in the civil rights movement. Now, I'm sure there are a lot of people that still hate the, you know, the two protesters. That's not the right scenario. But for a lot of us on the left, they were real heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so they are baby boomers, those guys.
Right.
Now, we have a millennial or two who are doing something similar, a la Colin Kaepernick, but in a very different setting. The Pan Am Games. We're kind of kidding about the Pan Am Games. I'm not sure that that's must-see TV. I'm not sure that sports fans are glommed on to what's happening in the Pan Am Games. and especially not when it comes to the fencing competition of the Pan Am Games. So these are not household names, but the United States gold medal winning fencer, a guy named Race Imboden, I guess, he's going to face possible sanctions because when they gave their team their awards, he knelt.
Right.
And now there are all sorts of ramifications, possible sanctions. He may not be allowed to perform in the next Olympics. Here we've got fencer Race Imboden explaining his motivation for kneeling during the national anthem.
I am a very, very proud to represent the U.S. in competition. I'm a very proud athlete, and I think that America is one of the greatest countries in the world athletically, and I would even argue that America is one of the greatest countries in the world, period. And for me, standing on top of the podium and hearing my anthem play has always been a moment for me of just pure pride. And over the last few years, I've started to come to different beliefs that have kind of hurt that pride, and some of those things are what I listed, which is racism and mistreatment of immigrants, as well as our president and the things that he's been representing.
Okay, so that's them's fighting words for a lot of people. Gee, what do you think of this guy's a take and stance? Because clearly he is in the more contemporary mode of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. It's not the first time they've done that. Apparently in 2016, he and a fellow fencer did something similar. How do you feel about these flag protests on the international stage?
I love it.
You do?
I love that because this forces us all to continue to have a conversation. I have no problem if someone, just because you kneel during the anthem, that doesn't mean you don't love your country, right? Just because you have a younger son that lives with you and is lazy and refuses to go get a job and you talk bad about him, that doesn't mean you don't love your son. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if you want to go history, right? Like you mentioned something, you said, hey, John Carlos, was that before your time? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was before my time. Yeah. I know the story and everything.
Yeah.
So you go back during that time, the majority of the country did not like it.
Yeah.
You go back to Muhammad Ali, the majority of the country did not like it. You go back to Martin Luther King, and they did a Gallup poll during that time when he was getting ready to do the March on Washington. Mm-hmm. Nearly 70% of the country thought that Martin Luther King was going to be a threat during that time. The head of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, right, told the United States that Martin Luther King was a threat, was a threat to the United States of America. So what I'm saying is even though the majority thought a certain way back then, it's interesting that now Muhammad Ali is considered the greatest.
Yep.
And Martin Luther King is considered, why can't you do things like Martin Luther King did? And John Carlos and everything, they have statues made of them.
Yeah.
Same with this person. You might not like it now, but let's be real. In 20 to 30 years, this guy is going to be a hero. He's going to be talked about. And whether you like it or not, Colin Kaepernick, he's not going away. The conversation in 100 years, they will talk about Colin Kaepernick, whether you like it or not. So history continues to repeat itself, and all is happening is Tom, this is an opportunity. By the way, you took a shot at the Pan Am Games. That's cold. I didn't watch it either. But this is an opportunity where someone raised the conversation. You know, Tom, for too long, we made a huge mistake in one thing. Whenever race would come up, right, the conversation, it was always, hey, it's not the right time. Hey, no, that's not a good idea. Hey, no, and that kind of makes everybody uncomfortable. And you kept doing that for years. And then you got Obama in the White House. It's like, oh, man, racism is fixed. You got a black man in the office. Everything's great. And so here we are today, right? And I see, text messages come. You see it on Twitter like, oh, why is everything about race? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know why everything's about race. I don't know why systemic racism exists. I don't know why you guys put those barriers in place. Actually, I do, right? But this is why we're having these conversations today, is because we have not been talking about it for so many years, Tom.
So let me ask you then, how significant is it? And I don't know if it's real significant or insignificant that you now have white athletes like Megan, Rapinoe, is sort of. It's a scandal when she complains and protests about, oh, I would never go to the White House, and is actually taking a knee and these kinds of things. And race this fencer, I don't think he's African-American either. Is that white's you know, taking moving to the forefront a good thing or a bad thing? Is it like, okay, this is all of us? It's not just African Americans?
It's the only way.
Okay.
It's the only way the conversation goes forward,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
You go back to the Civil Rights Movement and you go back to Martin Luther King marching in those streets. What gave Martin Luther King a bigger voice in a bigger platform is when white men and white women were marching with him. Then it became a story. You go back to the movie that was with Gene Hackman when they did the movie Mississippi Burning
yep.
Talking about the three people that were killed because they were trying to get those registered to vote.
Yeah.
Well, why was that? First of all, there was black people killed all the time for trying to help people get registered to vote. Why did that become a big story, Tom? You tell me.
I'll tell you why. They were three white kids.
See what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so when that, so no, two of them were white.
Two of the three
were white and one was black.
Yeah.
But that became a story because two white men gave their life behind during the Civil Rights Movement. So back to your original question, it is so important for those type of things to happen. Justin Britt, remember Justin Britt kind of put his hand on the shoulder of Michael Bennett?
Explain who, for people that don't really follow the Seahawks that closely, explain who Justin Britt
Justin
is.
Britt, center plays center for the Seattle Seahawks on the offensive line. When Michael Bennett was taking a knee during the anthem last year, Justin Britt would just stand over next to him and put his shoulder.
Hand on his shoulder.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. You think Justin Britt got hate mail? Yes. Yes, he got hate. Why would he get hate? Because people don't like to be uncomfortable, right? And when you're talking about race, Tom, it is an uncomfortable conversation and something that has been put off for too many years. Going back to this original, by the way, my man's got a cold name. His name is Race.
Yeah.
that really stands out. My man's name is Race. That really should be commented about.
Yeah.
That's what you want to call courage. Like, that's what you want to call someone that is a hero, to be able to do that, to take your platform and be able to do something like that. That's how you get the conversation.
One last question then to wrap this up. How do you feel? He did break the laws. Apparently there are sanctions that you're not supposed to do this, and he agreed to it as an athlete that he would not do that he would stand for, you know, respectfully for the do you think that he should be reprimanded? Should he be deprived of a chance to go to the Olympics again because of his stance here? How do you feel about the rule breaking versus what the rules are?
Well, I don't think you should prevent him from going there. And people say, "Well, that's the pride of his country. He's supposed to be doing that." You know what stands out to me on that too?
Yeah.
By the way, this is a passionate subject. Yeah. Jesse Owens. Jesse Owens did this in front of Hitler.
Yeah.
Was stood up number one, did all of that. But then when he came back to the United States, he wasn't even welcomed at his own celebrations. Wait a minute. Could you imagine that, Tom? Could you imagine being the one who won over there but not welcomed in your own? Wow.
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of instances. African-Americans serving overseas in World War II. Japanese Americans who were interned here are fighting, you know, overseas against the, you know, the enemies of America, and they're treated like dirt back here.
Hey, coming up next, Amazon. Amazon's always in the news. And by the way, I love Amazon. Tom doesn't, I do. But we're about to find out, why are they paying warehouse employees to tweet about their jobs? You guys are listening to Tom and Curly. G. Scott filling in for Curly.
This hour of the Tom and Curly Show is brought to you by Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Lake Washington Windows and Doors bringing you this final hour of the Monday edition of Tom and Curly, sans Curly, but with G. Scott.
Man, so, I love being with you, Tom.
It's a blast.
Everybody says, you're so nice. Joyful to be around.
So, one of the interesting things, I've been reviewing movies here before most people were born, I think, in our listening audience, but I'm always interested in a movie news, especially when it intersects with the real world.
Okay.
And we now have real world consequences for release of a particular movie in light of the two mass shootings that happened in the last couple of weekends ago. There's a movie called The Hunt, and here's an excerpt from the trailer. Its release has been at least delayed, if not canceled entirely.
Your idea is incredible.
I can't argue with that. We pay for everything, so this country belongs to us.
It's just business. Hunting human beings for sport.
They're not human beings.
Every year, a bunch of elites kidnap normal folk like us. Where'd they get you from?
Wyoming. Mississippi.
Orlando. And hunt us for sport. Hurry, hurry, hurry up.
So it's true. We're being hunted. What was that?
I think that was a rifle.
Who are these people? How are they getting away with this?
Okay, I think you've got the premise. Basically, there are 12 people every year that get kidnapped. They're sent out into this into the wilderness, and then a bunch of rich people, I guess, or a bunch of maniacs with guns and blades kill them off, and they do it for sport. This has sort of like the movie Battle Royale or The Hunger Games. One of my favorite short stories when I was like in middle school was called The Most Dangerous Game, and it was about a rich guy who had this guy come on his island, and he hunted him down. He said, "I'll give you 24 hours. If you can avoid getting killed by me, then I'll let you go." These are premises that are used not a lot, but I mean consistently over the years. And now Universal Pictures, it's an R-rated movie, by the way, has decided that they are going to cancel their September 27th release because they think this is just not the right message to be sending or a kind of movie to be cashing in on something so close to a national tragedy within 6 weeks of something like this. Gee, how do you feel? Is this a smart move, a bad move? Should art trump any kind of social context? Should social context always dictate what art is allowed or not allowed? Where do you stand on this issue?
I feel the same way about this as I do about Walmart getting rid of video game ads.
Okay, which is
ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Tell me what you really think.
We've had over 250 plus, right, mass shootings in this United States in 2019. Okay. The definition, according to the FBI, are 4 more people shot at once, right? Okay. So we've had that many. So basically, with the last 2 that have happened back to back, like they happened not this past weekend, but the weekend before, tragic nonetheless, yes. But that's not a reason to stop this movie. If anything, put the movie out. See, that's we always don't want to talk about things, right? Like, you made the movie for a reason. Mm-hmm. We've had a mass shooting problem before a couple weekends ago. Mm-hmm. We've had a mass shooting problem the entire year. We've had it in 2018. We've had it since Sandy Hook or Columbine before that.
Okay.
We've had a problem. So my take is release the movie. And last thing, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah.
If you don't release it now, then when?
Well, ideally, not right after the release. Now, here's what you've established is there's no ethical reason to not release it. That basically there's no like, oh, no, we're choosing the higher ground. We're taking a stance that we are not going to look like we're capitalizing on something so terrible. I grant you that. I think that's a legitimate stance. However, I think just the opposite. I think they're pulling it not because they feel like, oh, we don't want to encourage, violence any more than we already have in this country. I think they're releasing it for purely monetary reasons or not releasing it. I think that if it was released now, there would be fewer people going to the theaters to see it because the mood of the country is such that they don't really, I'm not sure I want to go see, this kind of a guy with a gun or guys with guns, picking off people, that they may be saving their pocketbook in effect. And if they release it at a less potent time, maybe they get more people. So I think it's a purely monetary reason rather than an ethical reason that you're kind of shooting down.
Tom, we've never discussed a topic in which I just wanted to say, for the sake of radio, I don't want to be like, what, Tom, you're right.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't think about that angle. So as you're talking, I'm sitting there shaking my head like, wow,
yeah,
I didn't even think about that.
I think
that might be a case.
Yeah.
Because now we're having a conversation. Both you and I are talking about it. I believe, didn't the president talk about it? Like, everybody's talking about the non-release of this movie.
Yeah.
And so now you wait a couple months. All right, Tom.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well, no, I'm not trying to. It's not a, you know, a game
where I think you're
one
right.
wins and one loses. I think there are two different ways to look at it. One of the things also that I think is interesting is depending on, I don't know how the filmmaker feels. The filmmaker feel like, no, listen, I want this movie. I don't want to sit on the shelf. I don't want to take that risk. But the money people behind it are making that decision. So anyway, you also teased before we wrap this segment up, you teased this idea about Amazon, that Amazon is now allowing their own workers to tweet.
That's a good thing. That is a good thing that they're doing this, because the truth of the matter
is... On company time?
Absolutely. Everybody else does.
Okay. So...
Because the reason why I think it's a good thing, Tom, is because this allows Amazon to take and create their own, their true narrative, right? Mm. Like, it's all of us folks like me and you to get on there. It's all these Amazon workers are peeing in their cups at the station. They're not even getting fair time. So now they're able to tweet and say, hey, check me out with the box, take a selfie.
I know, but it's all BS, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, the thing is, they're doing it on company time. Just to sort of, maybe we didn't set this up properly. The people that are working in the fulfillment centers, we're not talking about the Amazon execs, the software guys.
I'm not talking about them.
We're talking about the fulfillment centers. And what they've done is they are now paying people to work at this fulfillment center to, instead of racing around getting packages, you know, ready for shipping, they're allowing them to go to an office and just sit there and write and type and tweet about how much they love working at Amazon. Now, the thing is that I would not trust that any more than I would trust any employer who's basically getting paid. It's like you hire a PR firm. The PR firm is not going to tell you. They're not going to trash the people that are they're PRing for. I think that this is a little suspect, and it's primarily designed, you're right, it's a smart move on Amazon's part, to counter the unionization efforts that are happening at Amazon. We do have, because the disgruntled employee, if you want to characterize it that way, are the ones that are talking to the press, but they have, I think there's been a lot of exposure of how Amazon has been treating some of their employees in the past. That's been a good thing. And Jeff Bezos says, boy, I don't even recognize that company. That's my company. We'll make things better. But I'm not sure that I would believe any Amazon employee, especially if I know they're getting paid, you know, not on their off time. It's instead of their work. I'm not sure I'd believe it.
I mean, but isn't that normal? Like, isn't that normal for all places to have people at their jobs that are tweeting and on social media? Especially when you're going to tell a young millennial or Generation Z to stay off their phones. I mean, they can't even stay off your phones in school.
Yeah, no. And I don't fault Amazon for doing it. I fault people that really read it religiously. Like, it sounded like you were doing, saying, oh, wow, so this is the true narrative. No, this is another narrative from maybe they're happy employees, but also they're in the pay.
I know someone that tweets every single day and tells you about the state of our country. Right? Yeah. Like, that didn't used to happen.
No, but
I'm going too deep.
He's not getting paid for that.
I'm going too deep.
Okay, fair enough.
Coming up next.
It's been a great day so far. We're now going to wrap it up with the best thing about this show, right, G?
It's the letters. Tom always likes to tell me what we're doing next. You guys are listening to Tom Curley.
Tom and Curly Show. G. Scott filling in so well for John, who we are told is in the air now, so he will guarantee to be here. If something comes up, we may drag G back in there, but it's been great while you've been here. By the way, we're now at the favorite part of the show. Tom and Curly's mailbag is presented by Care Partners Senior Living. Care Partners Senior Living, bringing you the best part of the show. And I think I see the mailman now.
I'm the mailman, as you can see, I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me, I'm the mailman, if you didn't know, I'm the mailman, I bring the mail to your door.
Okay, gee, this is the time of the show where John usually turns to me and says, what do you see, what do you like, so I do the same to you. What do you see, what do you like?
Oh, on the topic of me filling in on the show, 206 says, you two are a great combo, Tom and G forever.
Yeah, we're getting tattoos of that right after the show. 425, John was abroad. Boy, I bet his arms will be tired tomorrow.
On the topic of Jeffrey Epstein, Dale in Denton says, let me get this straight. I can't walk down the street without being recorded, but there were no cameras inside or outside Epstein's cell. What the hell?
Yeah, you know, I wonder. I would think that there'd be a cell monitoring. Mr. 253 writes in, next time we should put him on a suicide stop, because watching sure didn't help a lick.
Yeah, that's right. Nolan, the construction worker, says, putting the conspiracy theory aside, this is one of the reasons classifying sex offenders with all other inmates is problematic. Think about what attracts you sexually. Do you think any amount of time in prison would change that?
On Trump's tweet, I was unhappy with him retweeting. To be fair, it was a retweet of a conspiracy theory, which is bunk. 425, Tom, the president is not responsible because his party allows it. Stop blaming Trump. He's not immoral. He's amoral. The Republicans have abandoned their core ideology by allowing this clown to say and do whatever he wants without consequences. Sad.
Bees in Kirkland. Gee, I'm surprised. No former president I remember lambasted the former administration with bold-faced lies. They might have disagreed with policies, but the fraternal organization of former presidents is a small order, and they are still cordial with each other despite their differences.
And Larry in West Seattle, gee, you're responsive. Are you really surprised? To Tom's outrage at Trump's conspiracy tweet was the best impersonation of Curly so far this year. My crew gave you a standing golf clap ovation.
With cell phones. Speaking of golf clap, area code 253 says, when my buddies and me play golf, you have to add a stroke if your phone rings during the round.
That's good. And 253, I am completely unimpressed by golfers as athletes. They require complete silence to hit a ball, standing still on the ground with a flat-faced club, while baseball players have to hit a ball going 90-plus miles an hour with movement, with a round bat, while thousands of people are screaming at them. That's well put.
When we talked about gun laws, Nick from Orcas says, if Congress was really serious about stopping mass shootings, they would raise the purchase age of a semi-automatic rifles to 25. It wouldn't eliminate all mass shootings, but I bet it would stop a lot of them. Mm. Most mass shooters are between 18 to 25 and purchase their rifles legally.
And always men. That's a pointed out. 253. Finally, a Mr. C fill-in that says what he would. I very seldom agree with G, but on gun control, he's correct. No more gun laws. That won't make a change in the shootings.
When we talked about the conversation of the best bathroom, area code 425 says, best bathroom? What's next? Best doctor to get a colonoscopy from?
Hey, if you need a colonoscopy, it might not be bad to know who the best doctor is for that. A Larry in accounting, naked in a honey bucket? I hear you, Rachel. Been there, done that.
Gloria in the 707 says, Tom, Rachel's bathroom story just reminded me of my trip to Uruguay. The toilet paper roll was outside the toilets. Frequent screams for help could be heard. Yo quiero TP.
Yeah. And the Seattle flag business, 425. Seventh place wins? Isn't that how they determine the winner of the Tour de France? That's funny.
Eric Code 360 says, I own the Seattle flag. I love the Seattle flag, and I don't think they should get rid of it.
Oh, wow. The only one, I think. Seattle Generation Gap, 206. No way. The millennials are just living in the boomers' basements. Yeah, they're kids.
Yeah. Erico 206 says, I see more baby boomers moving out of Seattle than into because of the property taxes. Mm-hmm. I've been in Seattle all of my 64 years, own my home outright, yet my property taxes are what my mortgage cost was, and I thought my birthplace in 1985.
When I bought it. Yeah. And on the Joe Biden discussion, 360, what if he has a slip-up talking to Putin or North Korea? They would take major offense even if it was an accident.
Area code 425, talking about Joe Biden. What are G's thoughts on Kamala Harris joking about smoking weed and then locking up thousands of marijuana violations? Yeah, don't ask me about Kamala these days. Really not excited.
Oh, we got a whole couple pages about N-word discussions we don't have time for.
It is time for the letter of the day.
I wondered if we're going to hear from Joey today. Joey the garbage man weighs in. Fellas, where's the washed-up 80s rockers? You think Jess Curley is gone? It's a free day? Expect tens of angry emails.
It was really only Joey the garbage man. He's the only one that noticed or complained.
That's all right. Thanks for listening, Joey. John, we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks a lot, G. It's great.
All the time. Bye-bye.